Dalibor Dedek was over 30 years old when communism fell in Czechoslovakia. Like many others, he took advantage of the new freedom to go into business, and he did very well for himself, building up a firm that now has an annual turnover of over £1 billion. But rather than buying speedboats and villas, Mr. Dedek likes to put his money into social projects. He's Ian Willoughby's guest in this week's One on One.
Dalibor Dedek is the owner of Jablotron, an electronics producer based in North Bohemia that's grown into an international concern. Jablotron's main focus is on security alarms and systems, while it's also in the past received a lot of attention for producing the world's biggest mobile phone. Mr. Dedek, who comes across as a very modest man, has himself won a lot of respect for his frank views on Czech politics and a can-do attitude that's seen him put his own money into projects like a centre for the homeless in Prague. On a visit to our studios, he explained how, when a couple of other ideas proved to be dead ends, in the period shortly after the reintroduction of capitalism, his firm hit on making security alarms.
There was a combination of the small privatization when people bought restaurants, shops and so on, and the complete amnesty, which was declared by our president Václav Havel. This definitely changed the point of view of people about the protection of property. And it directed our company to the protection, I mean the production of alarms.
So you're saying the fact there were more criminals around made people more concerned and it was good for your business?
Definitely, yes. You know two aspects, because before that, if someone was just a manager of the shop which belonged to government, if there was a robbery, it was bad, but definitely not bad for him. But when he used all his family savings to buy the shop, and in the same moment that all the criminals were released from the prison, the people really were concerned about the property protection. So it was an ideal moment to start business in the field of alarms. But the problem was that there were no installers. So our first marketing was learning or teaching the installers how to install the systems.
In the early 1990s, your company was also teaching other companies how to do business. What was the hardest thing, do you think, for people to grasp about capitalism and how to do business?
You know, it was very dynamic at that time, and people were very eager to start something own, but to get information like a package, how to do that, it was quite confusing, because every law was changing and what was true yesterday was not true the other day. So we collected like we called that cookery book, how to establish a company regarding the registration, tax and things like that, because before that people lived here like in a zoo park. There were feeding regularly, but that was all. And after that, the cages opened and we had a chance to provide them guidance. So we were acting like a teacher telling them, look, we are here to tell you how to start your own business. And by the way, you can also use our products. So it was a very good starting point.
You also became involved in international business in those days, particularly with companies in the Far East. Did you feel like a pioneer doing that kind of international work?
To be honest with you, when we started our business here locally, our market shrinked because splitting of Czechoslovakia. And when you produce consumer electronics, you need a market to be successful, to be economic. And we went for exhibition in Hanover in the year 91, I believe, and it was a complete disaster for us, because, you know, the businessmen from the West were visiting our booth, and we felt like a monkey from the jungle, because they were asking, do you people from Czech Republic know coffee, and do you know to use fork and knife? That we really felt strange, and we didn't sell anything. We were serving like a curiosity, but no real business was established there. And it made me very angry, because we spent a lot of money at that time. Such an exhibition was very expensive for us. And my second step or my second trip was to Far East. It was the period of so-called Asian tigers, I mean Korea, Taiwan and so on. It was booming. And I just wanted to know how the people in Taiwan succeeded in being successful in the field of electronics, having no history in this field. And I went there and I found out that this was the right place to be in, because I visited as a visitor a large electronic show, and I saw that all the potential buyers were not visiting exhibitions in Hanover or somewhere, but in Taipei. And I found out that we are having products which are suitable for the market, but we were just simply trying to sell them on the wrong place. And for that reason, we established our branch office in Taipei, and we started to offer our own products, I mean Checkmate products, in Taiwan. And it was quite funny that even a company selling electronics in Czech Republic was insisting that they want to be supplied directly from Taiwan.
Many of your security alarms are produced in China today. What has your experience of working with the Chinese been?
It's impossible to say a short statement about China. China is a very big place, very different. There are many contrasts. And after we started production in China, it was like a complicated way up to find out the right partners, people who you can trust. Because you can buy really top level, I mean the top quality level in China, and you can buy complete junk and nearly for the same price.
Also, I read that your own products were counterfeited by the Chinese.
Yeah, it happened. You know, we always dreamt to be a famous company. But later on, I found out that how you can recognize that you are starting to be a brand. Our product was copied completely with the company name. There was even a signature as a control check sign inside the product. It happened that we started to get to our service department defective items, which were so problematic that we got the idea that it was impossible to vent through our testers. And tracing it back, we found out that it was not our product, but it was copied. Even a small scratch in the injection mold was copied. They used some kind of 3D scanner. So the copy was so good that we were hardly able to recognize that it was a copy.
In the mid-2000s, you had some success with a mobile telephone that was essentially like a fixed line telephone, but which didn't have a cable, and it was popular with the elderly. Is that still going? Are you still selling that product?
You know, it was a quite funny story, because after we decided to implement GSM technology to our alarms, and when we went to talk to the GSM providers, they were telling, you know, it would be wonderful if it's not working only like an alarm, but it should allow the users to make phone calls and send SMS messages, because this is a main business for us. So we simply implemented a telephone plug to our control system, and you can connect any existing telephone, ordinary telephone, to our control system. But later on, we were forced to implement SMS messages. We found out that we were creating not only an alarm, but also a desktop mobile phone. So as a side product, we thought, maybe we should try to make a desktop mobile phone as well. We made 15 prototypes. We showed them at the exhibition in Hong Kong, and it happened that we were addressed by a reporter from CNN, and he made a funny story about that. And in 3 days, our web page was visited much more than the most famous porno servers. And you know, in a week we got an order for 200,000 units in the moment when we had 15 prototypes in our hands. And the customers were spoiled by the big makers like Nokia and so on, and they insisted they would like to get the first shipment in 60 days. And we succeeded, but this was a really adventure, and the business is still working, not such a big volumes like in the very beginning, because it was not stable, you know. One month we got the order for 100,000 units and for half of the year nothing from the same customer. Now it's stabilized.
Last year, last winter, you decided to help the homeless in Prague. What spurred you to do that?
Two things. It was a combination of two inputs, because in the evening I went to the National Theatre and it was freezing, I don't know, minus five, and a homeless man was arranging a carton box to sleep in. And I felt really sorry for him. It was, you know, in such a fancy part of the city, if you see people just ignoring such a situation. So this was a first input. And the second one, that next morning I had a meeting in our central monitoring section, and we were dealing with the problem that the response forces were solving a problem with the homeless people, because a lot of homeless people are entering or intruding someone else's property because they are simply freezing. If the response forces find such a person in someone's house, there is no way what to do. There was no one who was interested to take care of such a people. So this was the motivation.
You're talking about your own security firm.
Yes.
Now you've got a shelter for the homeless in Prague for about 80 people. Have you spent time there, and what has been your experience?
In fact, it was not so easy, because at first we bought an inflating hall, like a temporary solution. But the problem was that no section of the Prague wanted to allow us to build it. So this year we got the stable shelter, which was like a low-cost hotel, which we rented, and we opened that in the beginning of December. And I went there and I spent one night there. It was very interesting for me because it was about emotions. You know, people were lining in front of the entrance for 2 hours, freezing and snowing outside. And after the gate opened and there were let in the rooms, it was like if the ghost entered the place, not talking. And after they take off their coats and they warm up, they started be people. They started talk to you. Many of them were very intelligent. So it was for me like a small miracle.
You have a reputation for speaking your mind. Like many people in this country, I think you're dissatisfied with the political situation. You say that you don't want to enter politics, even though you've been asked by parties to run for election. Is there any way that you would like to, or feel that you should, as a wealthy businessman, influence the debate on politics in this country?
I'm disappointed with Czech politics. Maybe it's not only just a feature of Czech politics, because when I follow the news or situation in other countries, this can be a problem of the system. On the other hand, I really think that it would be much better for Czech people if we have better politics. I'm trying to use money and some influence to straighten up some things in Czech Republic. Like, for example, we support some foundation which is fighting the corruption in our country. And I also believe in direct responsibility of the businessman, because I do not like the idea that government is collecting money through the taxes, and after that the distribution of the money. It's not necessary. It's not efficient. If you go directly to support, I don't know, the education in your region, if you help schools to teach about the science, if you go to the hospital, you can provide them support in the technology. It's shortcut, because if you count how much it costs to send money to EU and to receive it back, significant part is lost.
My last question is, you seem like a very modest man, but you are also very wealthy. Has wealth changed you, do you think?
I don't think so. Fortunately, I seem that I'm immune about money, because, you know, you cannot be more happy if you drive more expensive car. You cannot be more happy if you eat two Wiener Schnitzels every day instead of one. It doesn't make any difference. The happiness and the money doesn't equalize.